Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is Tulsa Mayor G.T. Bynum. Since his inauguration just under 2 months ago, the new mayor has already reorganized his administration. He's developed a move to collect more data as a measurable way of monitoring progress toward city goals, convened an education roundtable to see how the city can help local education efforts, also convened a new commission on community policing, and is front-loading the start of the new Vision Tulsa projects by bonding the improvements against future vision tax collections. He says all of these initiatives are part of a larger overall goal to bring both population growth and better economic growth to the city. Mayor Bynum joins us today to talk about his first 2 months and what he hopes to accomplish over the next few months here on Studio Tulsa. Mayor Bynum, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be back.
This is about 2 months since you've become mayor. What's been the biggest surprise? What's been unexpected? And what has worked better than you perhaps hoped?
Probably the biggest surprise is there's so much to do. I knew there was a lot that needed to be done and felt that we put just an outstanding team together to take on so many different issues. But I mean, I work around the clock every day of the week. Part of it is, this sounds corny, but I just feel so fortunate to have this opportunity to have this job, and I want it to be good value for the people who entrusted me with it. And I want us to make use of these 4 years that we've been given to make a difference. So the biggest surprise is just how much work there is to be done. You always know it, but the more you talk with people every day, we learn about new things that we need to be doing to make Tulsa better. You're always learning new things we need to be doing.
You mentioned the reorganization. What was the reason for the reorganization? How do you expect your administration to work smoother or being more responsive with this reorganization?
Well, there were a couple things. I mean, one, I wanted our team to be focused very much on policy and initiatives, not on public relations. We have a fine communication staff at the City of Tulsa, and I trust them to handle the PR aspects of what we're doing. But I wanted us to have a really strong policy staff and a team that was focused on getting things done, not just talking about things that we might want to work on. I also wanted us to have a team that I thought brought a broad range of diverse opinions together. In my experience, one of the dangers that elected officials run into is surrounding themselves with a bunch of people with similar life experiences and similar opinions to their own. And I don't think that you reach good decisions when those are the only people you hear from. I wanted to have people with divergent political opinions on one team, different political affiliations, people with very different backgrounds. And so that's the team that we pulled together. But we wanted to reorient it around a focus on policy, a focus on having relationships with other governments, whether that's the federal or state government or tribal governments.
The county.
Yes, the county, of course. And then also, we wanted to take a different initiative on how we approach issues at the city from an efficiency standpoint. Instead of assuming that the city is just inefficient and that city employees don't have the answers, what we wanted to do was change that around and say, well, what are we trying to accomplish? What are our goals? And for a citizen, how can they tell if we're doing a good job? What are the measurements by which we show them that? And to implement that system, we had to change some things around at the city. I will say that that latter approach is something that we're already getting national attention for. I'm going to be speaking in D.C. at the TEDx Pennsylvania Avenue Forum next week on this to a national audience about what we're doing here in Tulsa on that front.
So a lot of that is the metrics-driven data that,
that is correct.
James Wagner is heading up. He was
yes.
on Studio Tulsa last month talking about that.
Yes.
Are you already starting to get data at this point, or are you at the point where you're trying to assemble the collection of that data?
Yes. So what we're doing is we worked with the city council to establish 8 first-year initiatives that we want to be focused on. And we broke these up into 4 kind of internal areas of focus that are more traditional city things, like improving our pavement condition or reducing violent crime. But we also added in things that are important for a community, but the city may not necessarily be the principal owner of the solution on, like high school graduation rates or per capita income. These are things that are important, but a lot of the time in government what you run into is people say, well, we have a primary responsibility for police, fire, and fixing streets, and therefore we're not going to be involved in a discussion on per capita income, when per capita income is very important for the citizens of the community. So we want to be tracking that and identify how the city can play a part in impacting that. So James is leading that effort, and what it's doing is it's allowing data that we're collecting on all of those fronts to really break down traditional silos and allow us to work much more collaboratively with businesses, nonprofits, and other governments on finding solutions to these issues.
Earlier, you were talking about this reorganization as being a way to sort of get yourself out of the echo chamber. Have you had something that's challenged your assumptions already?
A good example, and it's where national, often, you know, at the local level, there's not a broad range of divergent opinions on, you know, everyone agrees that we ought to be a safer city. Everybody agrees that we ought to have better education and
better
smoother
roads.
Streets. But when you come into national issues, I mean, we've had one just in the last week where the president issued an executive order directed at sanctuary cities, saying that if you identify folks who are not in our country legally and you don't alert federal authorities about this, then we will take note of that and you could be subject to losing federal funds. And what that allowed us to do is, you know, there's people all over the place within our team as it relates to national political opinions and thoughts on presidential race and federal immigration policy. And it was very good because the discussion that we had there really came down to, in Tulsa, are we a sanctuary city or not? And the answer is no, we're not. And how does this apply to us? And this is where it was interesting to me because I issued a statement saying nothing is going to change in Tulsa because we've been in compliance with what President Trump's order calls for a decade now. We've already been doing that for a decade. So we're not in danger of not being in compliance with it, but also we're not going to change anything. And beyond that, so you have the law enforcement side of it, the Trump argument on one side. But then the other side of it that I think gets all too often left out of the discussion and that I was more aware of because of the makeup of our team is compassion for our immigrant community here in Tulsa that is scared to death about what's going to come down from the federal government. You have a lot of really worst case scenarios being spoken about the president insisting that local police just start doing door-to-door searches for folks who aren't here lawfully when even the president is not suggesting that. So I included in my statement a point that if you're a law-abiding person here, we want you to know you can call the police if you need help. And we want our immigrant community here in Tulsa to feel safe and feel welcome and feel like this is a place of opportunity. And I think that threw some folks off who were so used to this either being, well, you either are with the president or you're against him. You can't support these protocols he has and be following them and still be compassionate towards our immigrant community. And I reject that notion. It was because of the discussions we had on our team that I think I was more aware of not being an immigrant myself, but having folks on our team who are very tapped into that community, what their fears and thoughts are, and me as the mayor having a sincere desire to make this a place that they view as a place where they can have great opportunities, just like my Irish immigrant ancestors who came here found for them and for future generations of their family, too.
Let's talk about a related subject. That's creating a Tulsa Commission on Community Policing.
Yes.
What do you expect that to accomplish? How soon will we see, say, in places in North Tulsa where the violence rate is high, when are they likely to see some changes in how they interact with police?
Well, they'll see changes very soon, but we will not be where we need to be at full capacity for a number of years. So, you know, voters approved in April the Vision Public Safety Tax that will fund 160 additional officers, the purpose of which is to fully implement community policing in Tulsa. And the idea behind community policing is that you have police and citizens working together to make a community safer. You know, it's what you think of when you think of like good old fashioned policing, that everybody knows the police officer in their neighborhood and has a direct relationship with them, and there's a greater sense of trust. And what you see in city after city around the country that's implemented this is it's better from a crime fighting standpoint because people feel more comfortable approaching the police when they know something. But it's also better from a trust, overall trust standpoint, and avoiding the types of tragedies that you've seen around the country that occur when both police officers and citizens don't trust one another because they don't know one another. And so we didn't want to, we thought it'd be kind of against the whole premise of the notion if we, you know, Chief Jordan and I came out and said, okay, everybody, here's what community policing looks like in Tulsa. That's beside the whole point. The whole point is that the community is working with the city to make this happen. So I put together a commission that has city councilors, everyday citizens, police officers who are involved in going through and looking at strategies that have been recommended all across the country and identifying, well, which approaches would apply best here in Tulsa. And so far, the discussion there has just been fantastic. President Obama had a task force on 21st century policing that really did it. They spent a significant amount of time putting together their recommendations. And so there are six kind of areas of their recommendations. And what we've done is we've broken our overall commission up into six areas. And they're going, each individual subgroup is going through their area and looking at the recommendations and seeing what applies here in Tulsa. We'll start reporting back on those recommendations here in 2 weeks. And the whole recommendation is due to me by my 100th day in office, which is March 14th. There are things that we already know we're going to implement, that the police department is already working on, that they don't even need to wait for us. For example, citizen advisory boards. We want to have in different parts of the city, and I think the idea is to have a different one for each of our three divisions, because you have different parts of the city face different crime issues, but that each of those divisions has its own citizen advisory board so that citizens can be providing police officers with real feedback on how they're perceived in the community, and the police officers can bounce ideas as far as strategies off that board. I think that's a first step and an important one in building up this level of trust that we need to have if we're going to be the kind of city that we should be from a safety standpoint.
Once all those subgroups report back to you on your 100th day, how soon will implementation begin to happen?
Well, I mean,
it's going to be a process that takes a number
Yes, of years. And I'll give you a few examples because I'm on the subgroup I'm working on is training and education. And so there are things in there that everything from moving the curriculum of your academies to include feedback from people who've had encounters with the police so that recruits know what it's like from somebody else's standpoint to deal with police officers, to hear from people from a diverse range of religions and ethnicities, what that is like for them to interact with police. But then there are other things that may be, you know, more costly, that are things that we'll need to build into our budgeting system. But I think you're going to see a substantial number of the recommendations implemented very quickly. Now, we won't have the full number of officers that we need for probably 5 years. You know, we're going to be hiring about 60 additional officers every year. We lose about 30 to attrition. And so to get to the number we need to be at, it's going to take us about 5 years. But we're not going to wait 5 years to start implementing this. We're going to start implementing it this year.
My guest today is Tulsa Mayor G.T. Bynum. Let's talk about another area where you've been pretty active in the first month or two, and that is looking at bonding to start the Tulsa Vision projects sooner rather than as the money comes in.
Sure. We decided to do that because that program was designed. It's the largest economic development capital program we've ever had in the city of Tulsa. The sooner those projects are online, the sooner they benefit us from an economic development standpoint. So we wanted them online as quickly as we could. Now, the trade-offs of doing that are, one, you incur debt and you pay interest on that debt. That's easily the greatest trade-off. And then the question becomes, are you making up the cost of that interest on what you would expect the cost of materials to be to grow with inflation over time? And from the economic impact of having the project in place, A very good example is the BOK Center. If we'd built that on a pay-as-you-go basis, now, before I say this, the BOK Center, since it was built, has triggered over $900 million in private investment in downtown. Now, if we'd done it as a pay-as-you-go project, we would have completed it about 4 years ago instead of over 10 years ago. So the benefit of having front-loaded it and done it early and had it open and create this ripple effect of private investment was worth the interest cost of doing it up front. The other, of course, risk is that you can pay off the bonds over time. And we stress to our finance department to be very conservative in their estimates on this. We asked them to put their finance model together, not thinking about any project schedules or anything at all. We said, if we do this conservatively, when would the money be available? And then looking at the model they developed, we reverse engineered the project schedules into that. So I feel very good. I think it's the best of both worlds in that it's a conservative financial model, and we're getting projects done in the next 5 years that are going to have a transformative impact on this city from an economic development standpoint. I mean, you think about it. 5 years from now, we'll have a lake in the Arkansas River that will change the way that people will use that river. And by the way, that'll be right next to the greatest public park gift in the history of the United States of America. We will be the home to an Olympic sport with the Olympic trial facilities here in Tulsa that people from all around the country will be coming to. We'll have installed bus rapid transit here in Tulsa, which every city that you install that in, you see a huge positive property value increase in the property that is along the corridor where bus rapid transit exists. We will have built a museum worthy of the greatest collection of Western art anywhere in the world. And by the way, the total cost of that project is, I believe it's upwards of $170 million. $90 million of that is being privately raised. So the citizens of Tulsa are getting a world-class museum that they're only paying for half the cost of, less than half the cost of. And that's just five projects. The convention center overhaul is going to make us much more competitive from attracting events here to Tulsa. We'll have streets that will be widened and all sorts of other projects in there that will help us from an economic development standpoint. And I'm just excited to see what kind of city this is 5 years from now from a recruitment and retention standpoint versus what we have to work with today. As the guy who has to go out and sell prospective businesses, and I can tell you this has already happened in my first 2 months on the job. I've attended a meeting with 10 different site selection consultants just 2 weeks ago, and earlier than that, met with a major employer who's thinking about relocating to Tulsa. And with each of them, when I told them about the types of projects that the citizens of Tulsa are investing in to make this a better city, that made a huge impact on them. And in the case of the headquarters company, perhaps a decisive impact. So for the folks who think this is just fun stuff for the people that live here, that's not the point of it. The point of it is to make it the kind of place that someone who's thinking, where do they want their company to grow? And they see this company that, or this city that is on the move, that's investing itself and is bullish about its future. That's the kind of city you want to go to.
And to follow that up, it's a lot of times it's the city that people are really proud of having all this great quality of life that attracts others to come.
That is the game in the 21st century. Yeah. We have a mobile society now. People can go to the cities that where they want to live. And we need to be viewed not just regionally. And that's a huge economic development shift for us as a city that I've implemented as mayor is we're not competing with the suburbs anymore. We're competing with major cities around the United States for growth. And we need to be viewed as a city that is vying to be competitive with them. And I think vision sends a clear message that we are.
Now, one downside, the funding for the bonds is through a lot of times sales tax collections.
Yes.
Sales tax collections are not growing at 1% at this particular point. They're down, about a point and three quarters.
In the last year, yeah.
Yeah, in the last year. And when you look at, everything from people buying what traditionally was local sales tax buys online, like, say, an Amazon Prime where you buy all your household materials online and you don't pay sales tax on that. What's the future for sales tax as far as being able to support these expenditures?
Well, I think there will always be some room for sales tax. There will always be some, bricks and mortar shopping that people do. But is it the funding source of the future for cities like it might have been in the 60s? No. I think it's an outdated and reducing mode of funding cities. And, you know, that's something that I thought Mick Cornett, my colleague from Oklahoma City, in his State of the City address a couple weeks ago, said that that's the greatest issue facing cities in Oklahoma, is that we are forced by the state government to be so heavily reliant on sales tax. Can't use property tax for operations, which is good in that it keeps our property taxes lower than other states. But the trade-off is it forces us to have higher sales tax rates than other states. And sales tax is a far more volatile funding source than property tax. So that is one thing that we're also looking at, is from a just overall resiliency standpoint as a city in the long term, how can we diversify our revenue out of just being so reliant on one funding source? And that's something that we are thinking about and talking with other cities about. We are pursuing legislation at the state level this legislative cycle for the establishment of public safety districts that would allow us to fund a small percentage of what it costs to provide police and fire out of property tax. And the point of that is sales tax plummets when your economy goes in the tank. Well, the worst time to be talking about laying off police officers is when your economy is going in the tank because crime is going up. You want to have something in there that allows equilibrium, and we think public safety districts would allow that. So this is one step in what I think is an overall need to diversify our revenue sources.
With the upcoming legislative session, you mentioned that, I'm hearing a lot of talk about extending sales tax to services. Is that something you see as a stopgap for city governments or not?
Well, I think that helps. And I think there's probably a greater chance of that being considered this legislative session than any in our past, simply because of the dire circumstances the state government finds itself in. But I have to say, you know, for us at the city, all this talk about internet sales tax versus property tax and things you and I have been talking about, these are short-term issues. The overarching focus for my administration and everything we're working on is to get Tulsa growing again. Our population has gone up about 6,000 people in the last 17 years. If you're growing at, you know, at such a sluggish rate, and yet our costs go up so much every year, that's an unsustainable trajectory for a city. And so the great issue for us is not so much the mix of funding sources. You can be as diversified as anybody, any city in the country, but if you're not growing, you still have the same problem. So this is something that I feel like elected officials in the past have chosen not to focus on because it's such a hard issue to deal with. The growth of a city is not an easy task to take on. It's not something you can just write a bill and get it done in a year. And yet it's the ultimate market test on how you're doing as a city, if people want to stay in your city or move to your city. And so that's the overarching focus of everything that we're doing, whether it's on education or working better with the county or changing our economic development strategies to be more aggressive on a national level. These are all focused on making Tulsa the kind of place that's going to be growing in the future, not just remaining stagnant.
Let me ask you, you have the seed of growth in the downtown area.
Yes.
As you look at other cities that have managed to at least accomplish revitalizing their growth, it starts usually at the downtown core. It gentrifies. It has more housing if it didn't have it before. Then the next step is the next neighborhoods right around downtown. Now, certain neighborhoods are doing well. Others, you know, they're sort of on a fulcrum at this point of which way they go. Others are not in great shape. What's your plan for those neighborhoods?
Well, and this is one of the reasons we're focused so much on education. The life cycle that I think you see in Tulsa right now is we've done a fantastic job in the last 15 years of focusing on urban living in downtown. And we still have a long way to go there to make it everything it should be. Yes. And we're doing fantastic on drawing young professionals to live in downtown. But what we don't want to see is that they move into downtown, they live there, and then they get married and decide they want to have kids, and they leave town. They move out to the suburbs. We want them to have the same types of attraction to living in Tulsa as a young family as they would when they were a single young professional. And so that, I think, is kind of the next wave of focus for us from a quality of life standpoint as a city. And that's one of the reasons we're so focused on education. I would also say you can't talk about the growth of Tulsa without talking about our Hispanic community. if it weren't for the growth in the Hispanic community in Tulsa, we would have lost population in the last decade. That's also one of the reasons I'm so adamant that we as a city be welcoming and a place of opportunity in particular to the Hispanic community in Tulsa. That's the future of our city from a growth standpoint. We need to be cognizant of that if we want to be a city that's continuing to be on the rise.
So I know you're saying you're going to be a proactive partner for education. What does that mean?
So my first day in office, we pulled together the mayor's education cabinet that has the superintendents for the three Tulsa school districts, the presidents of our higher ed institutions. And the purpose of that was for them to tell me what we can do to be of help to them. And the discussions to date have been fantastic. And I'll give you a couple examples of the types of things we're going to do. And you and I have discussed these before, but I mean, in Tulsa, there are 10,000 early childhood development opportunities that are funded and available in the Tulsa area. Right now, only 7,000 of them are occupied. There's a 30% vacancy. It's not a program we have to figure out how to fund. We don't have to create it. It already exists and money's being left on the table. So we're working with our schools to promote an initiative that will direct young families to those opportunities so they're aware of them. We find that's the greatest issue is people don't realize these opportunities are in existence. You go to the other end of the spectrum, federal financial aid opportunities. You know, we have the Oklahoma's Promise program here that's actually a state program. If your family makes less than $50,000 a year and your student keeps a decent GPA in high school, you get 4 years of college paid for by the state of Oklahoma through this program. Out of 77 counties in the state of Oklahoma, Tulsa County is dead last in registration percentage for that. And what we find is, and it's kind of tied to also our just abysmal rate of filling out the federal financial aid forms, is that people are intimidated by the paperwork. So we're working with the schools to connect volunteers with those folks, and we're going to be launching this initiative here in a few weeks. We're going to have contests between different schools for who can fill out the most applications. We're going to be running phone drives to provide information to people who need it for filling out those forms. All of this is about, you know, from a communication standpoint. We also have an advocacy issue at the state level. And that is the one that I think we have the potential to have the greatest impact with from a long-term standpoint. And that is that right now, you know, in Tulsa, we can pass bond issues that buy school buses or fix up buildings or buy iPads for kids, but we cannot pass anything locally that will pay teachers more than they make in other parts of the state. If we do that, we will be penalized by the state's funding formula. Well, I think that's ridiculous. In Arkansas and Texas, they both allow local communities to pass operational funding initiatives that makes local communities more competitive. And I think we have a unique opportunity here right now because the state clearly cannot fund education at the level it needs to be funded on its own. And so it presents us as local communities a chance to go to the state and say, quit trying to do this by yourself. Let us help. You don't have to pass anything in Tulsa. Just give us the permission to bring something up to voters and let the voters in Tulsa decide. If they want to spend their money on paying teachers more, they ought to have the ability to pass something. They shouldn't be banned from doing that by state legislators from some other part of the state. And so I'm hopeful on that initiative. We have our legal team at the city working with legal teams at the schools to identify the best path forward on that. But we are of one purpose on this. We are united in wanting to see this happen. And those are discussions that just were not happening historically in Tulsa. And it's great that we're on the same team now.
All right. Well, we'll wait to see if it bears fruit down the road.
I hope so.
Mayor Bynum, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Tulsa Mayor G.T. Bynum has been our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.